things. This is not that. But just because it's not that, we cannot discount it and say that it is just random thoughts, that it's just, you know, it's hard to read and to study. So we need to make sure that we don't approach it in that way. So the purpose of these Proverbs, again, is to teach and to provoke thought. And they certainly do that if we will think on them. If we will give them due time and due consideration, if we will diligently look into them, we will find the wisdom of God at our disposal throughout the book of Proverbs in this way. And so we see many of the facets of life covered, many situations. A lot of times people, will say, whatever your question is, go to the Bible, it has the answer. Sometimes people will say, well, I doubt that. Here's my specific thing. And what they don't realize is that most of the time, the book of Proverbs has something to say about that, whatever it may be. And so we overlook it sometimes. Now, these Proverbs are broken into four different types. And I just wanted to mention them again so that as we study them, you can see from their form, from how they're put together, that they're pointing at different things. First of all, in the Proverbs, we will have those Proverbs that are alike. In other words, they're synonyms. In their parallelism, the two statements will be two ideas that are brought together, saying the same thing, just in different words. So we will have the statement made, and then colon, sometimes a conjunction, and then another statement made, and both statements will be saying the same thing, just with different words. That's one approach that Solomon takes to the Proverbs. For example, in chapter 16, in verse number 18, it says, "Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall." That's an example of one that is a synonym, one that is alike. You have the same thought, just put in a different way. So they go together, if you will. And then the second way, and this may be, and I actually didn't run it down as far as numbers, but just in my thought, this may be the one that is used the most, and that is one that is opposite, or the opposite parallels. You have two thoughts presented in the proverb itself. The second line states the same thing as the first, but from the opposite standpoint. So in this, the two lines are usually connected with the conjunction but, and an example is right here in verse 1 of chapter 10. "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother." So here the thought isn't parallel in that it's saying the same thing just in a little different way. Here it is proving the point, but it's going about it from two different perspectives, opposite perspectives. Because it's talking about a wise son and a foolish son. And it's teaching us still about the son and what it's about. And then you have what's called a complete parallelism when you look at the Proverbs. Two parts are put together to form a whole. The second line amplifies and expands the meaning of the first line. And the link between these two is usually and or so. Look at verse number 18 of chapter 10. Be reminded here. "He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth the slander is a fool." So the point here is not to contrast the thoughts, not to say the same things, but in different ways with the two thoughts. But here it is to take the two thoughts and add them together to show what the complete picture is of the subject. And so they go together. And then the last one is comparative or type. Parallelism. The first line is an illustration or type or example drawn from nature, from daily life and the like. And it usually begins with as or like. Look down to verse 26 of chapter 10. "As vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him." So there you have a type. Proverb teaching in types. Now, all of these proverbs are meant, or styles of proverbs are meant for the same thing. Not just merely a theory, but principles for living. Not just a collection of wise sayings, But divine rules from God, divine guidelines from God, divine commands from God to govern our conduct and to shape our lives. And so we learn from Solomon as we look at these. And we know, as we have studied through this already, that when the principles of the book of Proverbs are properly studied and applied, they'll strengthen, they'll fortify, they will direct, they will help in every way. So don't dismiss them. And I don't mean to say that anyone here is guilty of that outright or out of hand. But a lot of times that's the case just because it's not our favorite place to just sit down and read sometimes because it does appear to be choppy. And so because of that, as we transition here into chapter number 10 and the remainder of this book, we will not be taking a verse-by-verse approach. Many times in years past, when I had heard pastors say they had taught through the book of Proverbs, I always thought to myself, how in the world did you do it? How in the world did you talk about one thing on this verse and the next verse talk about another thing and the next verse? How did you ever make any progress? How did you ever move through it at all? And well, I mean, some men will take 10 years to do it, and that's fine if that's what they want to do. But for me, I was always like, how do you do that? Until the Lord brought us upon this approach. And so we will not from here be going verse by verse, chapter by chapter. We will not be covering every verse of the remaining verses in the book of Proverbs. But instead, we are going to group the Proverbs by subject. And we're going to look at those subjects and what these Proverbs have to teach us. And one thing you're going to notice is that there are a wide range, as we've already said, of human behavior, human condition, and circumstance that are covered. But not only a wide range of those things covered, but you're going to find many verses that deal with these subjects. And so God doesn't just say it once. He doesn't just give us one idea or one verse about it, but He continues to show us more and more and more. The first subject that we're going to look at in the Proverbs is the relationship between parents and children. Another way to shape this or to think about it is the joy and grief that children can bring, because that's really the tone of the Proverbs, is to picture, to drive home the point that children are either a source of great joy and can be and are at times in life, or they will be a source of great strife or of sorrow and of difficulty. They will be one or the other probably many times throughout their lives to a parent. And we need to continue to keep in mind Solomon speaking to his son and teaching his son even in this here tonight. Some of the brightest joys, some of the most bitter sorrows in this world flow from that of our children. And that's really why Solomon spent the first 9 chapters pleading with his son to listen and to adhere to wisdom. He expresses the desire of a godly parent all throughout the book of Proverbs. In chapter 27 and verse 11, he says, "My son, be wise and make my heart glad. My son, be wise and make my heart glad." That's what he desired more than anything. So as we begin tonight, right here in chapter 10 in verse 1, we find the first proverb that we will look at. And as we look at these proverbs, we may look at 2 or 3 at a time on a Wednesday evening. We may look at 7 or 8. Because they're all dealing with the same subject, we can move through them rather quickly. And so that will be the framework that we will pursue this in. We notice here in verse number 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother." So again, we have the two statements, as the Proverbs often are put into that form. We have these two statements pointing us to the relationship of parents and their children. We find here 2 types of sons are mentioned, a wise son and a foolish son. So here he is speaking in generalities to the idea that we are going to experience as parents times when we have wise children and times when we have foolish children. And let me remind you, when Solomon says son, we are applying that to sons and daughters. When he says fathers and mothers, there is some specificity to that at times, but can really be applied both ways, talking about parents. And so he is talking about a wise son, a wise child, a foolish son, or a foolish child here. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. The wise son is the one who listens to the godly instruction and counsel of godly parents. That is wisdom. The Word of God says so. A lot of times, kids think they know better than mom and dad. They think they have it all figured out at whatever age they are then. They think they know more because are young and mom and dad are old and therefore they can't figure anything out. But the Bible here implicitly tells us that a wise son is one who listens to the godly instruction and counsel of godly parents. He had mentioned that already in chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7. Many times he has come back to that point in teaching his son. A wise son is one who fears the Lord, one who flees temptation and patterns his life after Christ. And here's the point that he makes here in the first half of this proverb. That kind of son maketh a glad father. He maketh a glad father, one that is rejoicing in joy and gladness in his heart. One that can think about their son and or daughter and thank God for who they are. Thank God for what they do. Thank God for the approach to life that they are taking. Young people, how is the heart of your father put into this context? Is it glad? A wise son maketh a glad father. The godly parent shares in the minister's joy. John, the Apostle John wrote, as he wrote his three letters there at the end of the Gospels, that he, joyed his heart to think of his children walking in the truth and doing that which is right. And that is true of ministers or of preachers, Sunday school teachers. They rejoice when they see that. But also of the parent. We share in that, don't we? When we see our children, as we raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, responding to the things of God, when we hear them praying and reading their Bible, when we see them faithfully attending church and engaging in what they hear, when we see them patterning their behavior after that of Christ, it makes a glad heart, doesn't it? Not a prideful one. Notice he's not saying be prideful and take credit for it. But it makes a glad heart, or it makes a father glad when he hears or when he sees those things taking place. But then we see on the other hand, a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. A foolish son is the one who disregards the instruction, who turns his ear away from the wise counsel of his mother and father. One who says, I know better than you. I'll do as I please. He disregards the instruction and counsel of godly parents. He does not walk in the fear of the Lord whatsoever. Children, your fear of the Lord is reflected in your honoring your mother and father. You cannot fear God and dishonor your mother and father. You cannot do it. Because they are a reflection of God to you. And over you, as we studied back in all the way back in chapter 1, as we began, a foolish son walks not in the ways of the Lord, and as a result, of course, sin leaves its mark upon his life. Such a son is a source of heaviness to the godly parent. Such a son or a daughter is burdensome unto them. It's the heaviness of his mother. I always find it intriguing how Solomon assigns some things to the father and some things to the mother. And there are times perhaps when you can make out the reasons why. Understand that there are always reasons that God does or says anything and everything that he says. But instead of chasing those rabbits all the time, we kind of apply it to both, because of course he's going to be the heaviness of the father too. And of course, she's going to be the joy of the mother as well. But it's very specific here to say the heaviness of the mother. There is more of a burden on a mother's heart when these things happen and these things take place, perhaps because of her position in the home and the family, spending more time with the children as they grow. Maybe is why, I'm not sure. Maybe just how women are made differently than men could be. But either way, a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. None of you want that tonight. None of you children in attendance tonight want to be the heaviness of your mother, the burden of your mother. None of you want to be that. And so we need to be paying attention to that in life. The good thing is there is always the ability to right the ship. Just because one is a foolish son today doesn't mean he has to continue in that foolishness tomorrow. He can be a wise son. He can grow into a wise man. And he can serve God. And he can go on and have a wonderful life in the Lord. There's examples of that all around. And we're thankful for that. Now turn over with me to chapter 15 and verse 20. As we continue along this subject. Chapter 15 and verse number 20. A wise son maketh a glad father. So there's that same statement again that we've already dealt with. But a foolish man despiseth his mother. A foolish man despiseth his mother. Once again, this contrast is drawn between a wise son and a foolish. Between a wise son and a foolish. We see that a wise son, again, is a source of gladness, of pleasure, and of delight. But a foolish son is said here. The different language is in the second part of the proverb, where it doesn't just say it brings heaviness to the mother, but here Solomon adds to that and said, a foolish man despiseth his mother, despiseth her. That's strong language. The foolish man, the foolish son, disregards and lives contrary to wise parental instruction, to counsel, and in doing so, he dishonors, he discredits his mother, and shows a great discontent for her. Shows a great dishonor for her or for his father as well. Do you despise your mother? Do you despise your father? It can be seen in the way that you look at them, in the way that a child treats their mother or their father. If there is despising going on, it's because they are acting foolishly. Now, we're not going to chase this rabbit right now either. But notice that Solomon goes from talking about son in the first half of this proverb to man in the second half of the proverb. This shows us that even after we are out of the house, even after we're on our own, if we break from and if we go away from that which we have been taught, we are in effect despising how we were raised, despising our mother and father for the things that they did for us in raising us in that godly fashion. And so there is responsibility even now after we're grown not to despise that which we have been taught and those who taught it to us. And that carries through the remainder of life. Now, chapter 17, verse number 21. Chapter 17, verse number 21. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow. And the father of a fool hath no joy. Now we see that this is one of those proverbs that are constructed so that the first half and the second half come together to form a complete statement, form a complete picture of the subject. He that begetteth. So here we see talking about even bearing, having children, bringing them into the world. When a child is born, as a child grows, that child is an object of great hope, an object of great expectation to a godly parent. Isn't it a wonderful time when our children are born and we see them brought into the world? And think about as you hold them there in the hospital or at home or even as you watch them grow through their first steps, wondering what they'll experience, the great things that they will see and do and have in life. And there's a great hope built within us, a great expectation even of life to come. A godly parent raises that child in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, trains them to walk in the ways of the Lord even before the Lord ever saves them. And that is what we are desiring before they ever enter this world. There's a great amount of hope, a great amount of expectation in that. And we pray that earnestly that the child will be pleasing to the Lord over the course of their life. But we know sometimes our children depart, don't we? We know sometimes they leave from how they've been raised. And in doing so, Solomon is pointing out here that that child causes great sorrow to the heart of a godly parent. A lot of times when we see that happen, our knee-jerk reaction is to be critical. Well, they must have done something wrong. They must have messed up somehow, you know, kind of thing. And that's wrong on our part. That's wrong on our part because that is not the case, and it really doesn't even matter anyway. But there is sorrow that is caused in the heart of a parent when this does unfold. The godly parent mourns and grieves over such a child. The phrase that he says here, the father of a fool hath no joy, is expressive of the degree of sorrow, showing the depths that the hurt goes within. It shows how great that really is. Because when you're raising children, it's not just a job, though it is a job. It's not just a responsibility, though it is a responsibility. It is a great and wonderful privilege that is filled with many, many wonderful blessings. But yet we know that it also can be the source of great sorrow experienced if that child is rebellious, or as Solomon puts it, a fool. He has sorrow. He has no joy in that. And to walk that path is a very difficult and overwhelming thing. He backs that up in verse number 25 here, or adds to it, maybe I should say. Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bear him. The word grief means a deep and a heavy sorrow of heart. It's a word that speaks of misery, of anguish, and of heartache. It shows the depth, again, at which the hurt comes. You know, the expression is we hurt the ones that we're closest to the most or whatever. And the reason for that is because we're close to them. So there's a greater potential for that hurt. And so when a child leaves the church, it hurts the church. It hurts the pastor, perhaps Sunday school teacher. It hurts others, but nothing like it hurts mom and dad. Nothing like the grief, the sorrow that it is to them, the bitterness. The bitterness means that which is distressing to the mind, intensely unpleasant, that which brings severe pain. And if that child goes on to live in sin, in continual disregard of the righteous training that he had received, the instruction of the godly parents, it just brings more and more grief, more and more bitterness. And all that can be done is to pray that God would turn it around, that God would help to deal with those situations. Now look at chapter 19 and verse number 13. This shows how serious the parent-child relationship is in the eyes of God. It shows how much responsibility there is for a child to be raised in the nurture and admonition of the Lord by father and mother. And also the great responsibility of a son, of a daughter, to honor that father and mother and the things that they are bringing into their life and the direction that they are taking them and leading them. Proverbs 19, verse number 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father. And the contentions of a wife are a continual drooping. We're just going to actually deal with the first part of this proverb. A foolish son is the calamity. Calamity is something that causes great damage, great distress. So many children get the idea that, you know, parents have children just so they can have someone to torture or boss around or do all their chores and all that kind of thing. They never really begin to realize, perhaps until they get older and then have kids of their own. Love and the care, the sacrifice, the emotion that goes into it, the great deal of personal sacrifice that is involved. This word calamity, it's a word that speaks of loss and of ruin. The foolish son can cause loss and ruin to his parents. You've heard stories, you know people, and you've seen that, not just financial, though it could be that, not just personal loss in the community, but even more so the loss of of respect for one another, loss of which you've invested emotionally, loss of time, all that kind of stuff, just thrown out the window. A child that disregards and rebels brings a calamity that earthly riches and honor cannot alleviate. And so, when you really think about it, when a child acts in this way, what they lose the most isn't money or, physical or material, but what they are concerned about the most is that their child is rebelling against God. And they know that over the course of time, God will not forever stay His hand of correction upon them. And that weighs heavy upon the heart of a father and of a mother. Look at verse number 26 here in chapter 19 as well. He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. This is a good proverb to look at as a definition, if you will. Sometimes when you take your son to the book of Proverbs and you show him something, a foolish son is a calamity of his father, what's that mean? How does he connect to that? You take him to another one, how does he connect to that? Or how does she connect to that? But when you take him here, there's a definition really involved of bad behavior. A definition of what your actions actually do. He that wasteth, he that chasteth away, is a son that causeth shame and a son that bringeth reproach. And if a son will take that to heart, if he will write that proverb upon their heart and desire not to be guilty of breaking that, he will go a long way to honoring his mother and his father. To not waste his father. I mean, just think about that. Wasteth his father. You have an opportunity, if you have a faithful, godly father in your life, you have an opportunity to learn from his experience. Nothing more valuable than a man's experience over the course of his life in his own raising of his children, in his work experience, in his life experience. Nothing greater for a boy than to just watch and learn. If you waste that, then you have essentially wasted your father. And that is a terrible thing to waste. You can learn a lot. And that's not a prideful statement. It's reality. That's what God has given boys, fathers, for, or girls. Learn. Don't waste what God has given you in that. And as we think about it as fathers, wow, what a great responsibility it is to think about the fact that we have that ability and that power. And then the son that chaseth away his mother. It's easy for sons to chase away their mother, especially as they turn into teenagers and get a little bit older, because they think they know it all and they don't want to be babied anymore. They get a restlessness inside of them where they can feel perhaps the man that they're going to be, but yet the boy inside of them still takes them to the reckless of things. And so a lot of times he'll chase away his mother. Doesn't think he has anything to learn from her. Doesn't think he has anything whereby to grow from her. Doesn't embrace her as he should. Don't chase away your mother. Don't waste the time, the opportunity you have to learn from her, to be loved by her, to be nurtured and cared for by her. Doing so will benefit you greatly in the characteristics that you have in life, but also in the relationships that you seek and are able to be have a part of your life in. And that is great advice from the book of Proverbs. Don't waste your father and don't chase away your mother. And your actions many times will do both if you are not paying attention to what you're doing. And if you do that, then you're causing shame and you're bringing reproach to the parent and to himself. Reproach is brought. Disapproval, discredit, saying that your father's not worthy to be valued. Your mother's not worthy to be embraced. And so you waste one and chase the other away. And that is something that, you know, all kids are guilty of at times. Well, the problem is when there's a great pattern of that in life, it will lead to a very small life for someone that grows up and gives himself to that. Two more here tonight and we'll conclude. Look at chapter 23. Chapter 23, and we're actually going to read verses 24 and 25. Two Proverbs kind of put together here by Solomon back to back on the same subject. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. After three or four or five Proverbs and the negative aspect of things, which has to be dealt with because our children are born with that bent towards sin and being owned and operated by sin and by Satan, that certainly that's going to be experienced by us many times. But there's a big upside, isn't there? The father of the righteous shall rejoice greatly. Our quiver being full of righteous arrows makes for a happy hunter, that's for sure. And makes for a happy defender of the family, that's for sure. Makes for one that provideth for his health well, because he has many at his disposal to help and to be there for him. And so the father of the righteous, he that begetteth a wise child, rejoice in that. Rejoice in that. It's not all just in the genetics, but it's also in how we raise them and teach them and how they grow. Rejoice in what you see in them and tell them that. Tell them that you rejoice in those good qualities and those wonderful things that you see that they're doing. He that begetteth a wise child shall have joy, shall be glad, shall rejoice again there at the end of verse 25. And that's a wonderful thing. To live, to see our children live righteous, to see our children have the hope, of course, of salvation come upon them, and then to serve the Lord. We rejoice in that when we see it, don't we? And that is a wonderful benefit, to parenthood. It means, you know, it's a wonderful thing when you see other people saved. You know, if you had, the joy of being able to be present, had the joy of being able to be singing when they come forward and are saved, or whatever the case is. You just hear about it. It's a wonderful thing. But when it's your child, it's even a greater and blessed experience. And we have the ability to rejoice in that to a great degree. And then in chapter 29, notice here in verse 3. 29 in verse number 3. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father. Okay, so he's talking here about proof that you have wisdom and love wisdom. Father's going to be happy about that. You're going to see joy in your father when he looks upon you, when he looks upon your life, when he looks upon the things that you do with your life. There will be joy in his heart because that wisdom is loved by you and is applied by you. But here is a contrary statement. But he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. Don't waste it. You know, the prodigal comes to mind. He wasted his father's substance on riotous living. He wasted a lot more than just money when he went looking to that far country for, the riotous living. He wasted the money, that's for sure. But he also wasted all the things he'd been taught. He wasted the substance, not just substance, material substance, but the substance of who his father was. He wasted that as he went in search of that riotous living. So, in conclusion, these Proverbs that we've covered here tonight speak of the great concern that godly parents have for the children. They speak of the great concern that is on our heart, of the fact that if a child lives in sin, he disregards the righteous training, he brings much grief and bitterness. But on the other hand, when we see them grow in grace and in knowledge of the Lord, we see them perhaps saved to the knowledge of the truth, all those things. What a wonderful, wonderful thing it is. And then just conclude with this thought. Christian parents are those that, of course, have been saved by the grace of God. We can judge our own spiritual condition by examining what gives us joy and what causes us sorrow concerning our children. Think about that. Your own spiritual condition will be reflected in what gives you joy in your children and what brings you sorrow therein as well. So if you're joyful over the fact that, or it gives you the greatest joy, or perhaps the only source of joy, that they have achieved some great secular achievement, then we need to be checking our own spiritual temperature and condition and seeing what is therein. We need to be thankful and rejoicing more in the spiritual things for our children. Raise them as if they're God's children already, and pray that over the course of time He'll make them God's